Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Aidan Turner on Stardish Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Stardish Radio. This is Joanne, your host. Today is September 16th, 2009. So happy to be back on the air with you guys, and thanks for coming out. Programming note tomorrow, Mark Lawson from One Life to Live will be joining me at 10 p.m. Eastern, so make sure you check that out. Monday, Eugenie Cornelius, a musical genius. You have to listen to his stuff, and he's also a very talented actor who's going to be coming on, sharing his music and talking about some of the things he's doing acting-wise, and that will also be at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure you check that out. Tonight, I'm extremely happy because one of my all-time favorite guests, this is making her third appearance on Stardish Radio, the beautiful Miss Tana Frederick.
I was just going to say, hi, sweetie. I was going to say it's my favorite show. Yay! So good to talk to you again. It's like going home to Iowa for Christmas or something.
Well, I'm glad you're back. I thought David Provo was calling in. I don't see him yet, so hopefully
he should be calling. Okay.
Okay, good. All right, perfect. So how's everything going, girl?
It's good. It's really great. I'm in rehearsals for a show right now with David Provall and a cast of great actors. And it's an original play by Henry. He wrote it in like 4 weeks, which is absolutely incredible. I know. Actually, the first act he wrote in 3 days, I went to the Iowa Film Festival, and I was trying to figure out, because I've been doing a film and then a play and a film and a play, and I've done three of Henry's films, and this is my fourth play I'm doing with Henry. And so I was going to do a different play, and he said, you know what, I'm just going to write it. So I went to the Iowa Film Festival, and he wrote the first act in 3 days. Absolutely incredible.
You know, tell Henry he needs to chill out, man. Energize your bunny fingers.
Yeah, I love it. It's great. I mean, his material works really well for my acting style, and so it's just fantastic to have somebody writing work for me.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you're like a kid in a candy store. It's like, okay,
yeah.
Let me say, oh, this is what I want to do next month, Henry. Get up again. Come on, move it. I think that's great that you have somebody like that. Especially, you know, these days in the acting profession, things are pretty bleak out there for a lot of people, and not working and stuff. So you're very fortunate to have someone like him. I think that's fabulous.
And the actors that are in it, the man who plays my father, Jack Keller, is just absolutely incredible, and he's been in the actor studio all his life, you know, and all of these people are not working because it is so difficult right here, and, you know, now in Hollywood, everywhere with a somewhat of a recession in the economy, you know, it's just people are just so happy. The actors are so happy just to come to work and get lunch, you know. It's,
right.
I mean, it's just we're all so happy to be working, really.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's no doubt about that. I had the other day I had on an actor, Tyler Christopher from General Hospital, and he was talking about he's been on General Hospital since, I think, 1996, and he had taken like a three-year hiatus, you know, to see and explore his options or whatever. Wasn't much out there for you, you know, and it was like, all right, let me go back to where it's safe. And, you know, so he's been back for, you know, a couple of years now, and he's like, I ain't going nowhere unless there's something coming to me.
It's so true. Yeah, it's really scary, you know, but I guess, you know, to be an actor is always terrifying. And I think at any point in your career, you're just like, what am I doing, and am I going to get hired again, you know? So,
right, well, you know what, you're one of those fortunate ones that have the skills and have the man, Henry Jaglom, behind you, you know, 150%, that's just going to keep spitting stuff out for you, you know. I mean, everything that he writes for you and everything that I've seen you in anyway, I just completely adore. So, I mean, it works.
Thank you so much. I know it's I'm really blessed. It's like, you know, he calls himself my David O. Selznick, you know, and it really feels like I am in this lucky old Hollywood studio system from the 1940s. You know, I'm reading Joan Crawford's biography right now, and she talks about how you know, these, some of the actors didn't like the studio system, but a lot of them loved it, and she was one of them who just said, you know, I felt safe. They were putting money into me. Of course, I couldn't bite my nails in public, but, you know, why would I? And
right.
you know, I just followed what they wanted me to do. They told me to do work, and I did it, and they gave me advice, and I took it, and I just felt so safe being looked, you know, being guided by these people in the studio system. And, you know, Henry is like that. It's just, okay, I'm, you know, what's next? Give it to me. I'm ready to do the next thing you want to do. I mean, and no actor, I feel, really has that privilege nowadays. And it's
mm-hmm.
just, it's really cool. It's really cool. It's like a dream come true for me. You know, it might not work for everybody, but I like knowing I have work coming and somebody's
right.
my guardian angel, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, definitely, I can totally understand that. Let me ask you, Irene in Time came out Father's Day. How did that do?
It has been amazing. It's been amazing. It started, it's actually opening next week in New York. And
oh, where?
At the opening is at the French Institute, is that right? And then it opens at the... Oh, man, I forget which theater it is. We've been opening, you know, all
yeah,
we
little by little,
here.
Right across
yeah,
the country.
And then so we kind of spread east, and the Cinema Village.
Okay.
Henry just yelled that. I should know that. Cinema Village. But it's been nice to open gradually over the course of 3 months, because for an independent film, you have to garner mm-hmm. that talk and support and, you know,
right.
people knowing it's in the theater. So Henry has made contracts with the theaters, and we're lucky enough to gradually spread across the country and have that time, you know, do the
mm-hmm.
whole March of the Penguins thing
right.
where people just, it snowballs.
Right, right. So I have to ask you, how is your dad?
How's my dad? My dad's great. He's great. He's really wonderful. He's,
he's adorable.
He is adorable. We had so much fun.
Oh, absolutely. It was a treat to have him call him at you, especially about that film and at that, you know, close to Father's Day. So I know that was, you know, really special for you.
It was very special. That was such a treat. And nobody else would do that except for you. So thank
really?
You so much.
Nobody would do that?
No, I mean, you have, you know, you're very personal and heartfelt, and you know you,
oh, God.
You do
hey,
such
pull
sweet
up
things.
Your Aunt Bessie and tell her to come on. I don't care. Make it a party. You know, it's about celebrating you and your work. So for who, you know, whoever you want, hey, bring them on. Let's do it. I got no issues with that. You know? All right, so the play's name is called Just 45 Minutes from Broadway. What is the story behind it?
The
you
story
play
is,
Panda, correct?
Yes, my character's
okay.
name is Panda, and it's about this theater family. It's sort of a, you can't take it with you in you know, a modern setting. It's a theater family that's in this old decrepit house. It's 45 minutes from Broadway. They've been in the Yiddish theater, and they're the struggling family. Jack Keller plays my father. Diane Salinger, who's an amazing actress, she was on what's the show, Carnival, and she's done tons of work, and she's an amazing teacher out here in Los Angeles. She's my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And David Provol is my uncle, and then Harriet Schock is actually making a stage debut after a while, and she plays a boarder in this house. And I've been dumped by my boyfriend, who's a civilian, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he had a straight job, and I'm an actress, and I've come home to live with my parents because I have nowhere else to go. And then my sister comes home, and my sister's being played by a wonderful actress, Julie Davis, who was the director and producer and writer and starred herself in a movie called Amy's O, which is one of, I think you'd love that movie. It's one of the cutest, most empowering women's films
oh, yeah.
of all time. She's just darling. And she plays my sister, who is a civilian and has left the show business family. She comes home with her fiancé, played by David Garber, and they are secretly coming home to shock the family with something that they've done under their family's noses about, you know, taking the house over. And but the fiance ends up falling in love with Panda, my character. And so, you know, it's kind of usually it's fun because usually films are about the straight-laced middle-class family who has, you know, a bohemian daughter who comes home and, you know, is the sore thumb. But this is this crazy, out-of-control family, and the straight, normal girl comes home, and she sticks out like a sore thumb. So it's, you know, it's really fun and really, really got, you know, it's more than anything, it's just this beautiful romantic story about two people who fall in love and come from completely different worlds. And
mm-hmm.
Romantic.
Sounds it. Well, I wish it was closer to me. Hello. Well, maybe, you know, you guys, what you should start doing, tell Henry I said this, okay?
Uh-huh.
You got to start turning it into a DVD release of these plays. Because because, you know, this way, for those who can't get to Los Angeles or wherever you're having them, put them on DVD. I mean, you know, it's not unheard of.
We actually did, we filmed Always, and Always But Not Forever, the last play that I did with Henry, you know, which got amazing reviews, and actually brought in two cameras, and Ron Vignoni directed it, and it looks amazing. It just hasn't, because he's directing the next, he's editing the film I just finished with Noah Wiley.
Okay.
He hasn't finished editing, so as soon as it comes out, I will give you the first copy.
Oh, my God. I haven't been to a play, and I guess, let me see, what was the last play that I saw? And I have to really go back and search because it's been that long, and I have to say that it was probably Evita.
Wow, in New York?
Yep, I was, this is like really making me feel old now. I think I was like 17 years old. I'm going to be 40 this year.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You should come out to Los Angeles. It's going to be playing through January.
Oh, I wish, honey, my children wouldn't let me leave the state again. Are you kidding me?
Oh, how are they?
Oh, no. Oh, they're good. My oldest, he's going to be 17 in December 1st.
Wow.
And my little guy is going to be 9 on Halloween.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
We have a busy, busy winter season in my family. We have tons of birthdays in the month from October to December. It doesn't stop. December is the worst out of them all. We have my son on December 1st. I'm December 5th. My brother is December 10th. My twin nephews are December 12th. My uncle's December 27th. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on.
What
and
is,
we're planning a trip down to Florida. December?
No, I mean, what month is it? Because in my family, my mom's is December 2nd. My godmother's is December 5th.
December.
Yeah, and so I'm just trying to think, what month is it that the parents were...
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. And it's so funny because me and my brother are like literally a year and 5 days apart. And
wow.
it's like, hey now.
It would have been February, March.
March, yep.
Yeah.
Sometime in February, beginning of March, yep.
People
oh my
get
gosh.
Feisty in
they
the spring,
were busy
I guess.
In the spring. Busy in the spring is what you are. Okay. So it's quite a busy fall winter season for this family, and we're actually driving down to Florida. My parents live in Florida, so we're going to drive down to Florida for Christmas this year. We spent every Christmas for the last 15 years in Florida, if not 16 years in Florida, and my parents are selling their house this year. So my mother was like, that's it. I'm not coming up to New York for Christmas this year. You all have to come down here. So all five of us, my brothers and sisters, kids and everybody, we all are ordered to be in Florida in December. So,
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, so we're gonna have it. But California, I would love to come out and spend time in California. Maybe after my oldest son graduates high school, then I'll have time. But, you know, being single with these kids, it's just not feasible.
Oh my God, you're amazing.
You know, I would love to, definitely. That's why I want my DVD, Tana. Come on. Oh, all right. But what I love about this play, what I'm reading here, all the proceeds of this play are going to, from the gala night, opening night, I should say, October 17th, they're going to the children's outreach programs at the nonprofit Edgemar Center for the Arts. That's fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. It's really important right now to have those programs for kids, and they have amazing children's theater programs, and so we're giving all the proceeds to that, so we can give some kids a scholarship.
Oh, and it's so important to put it back into the kids, because it's sad that so many schools have cut the arts out of their budgets just because it didn't fit anymore. There's no outlets for them anymore. I mean, I remember being in junior high school, and I did ballet, I did dance, regular dance, I did choir, I did all that stuff, and that was in a public school. You know, that wasn't a private school, that was just a regular old public school, but those things don't exist anymore.
I know.
Far and few between.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all my programs are in public schools, too, and you know, especially out in Los Angeles, it's kind of I think it's a tragic state when art is not accessible to children, you know, on every economic level. And you know, it's changed so many kids' lives, and gives them so many opportunities to find their joy and their passion, and have an alternative to you know, whatever, drugs, violence, everything out here. And so it's really essential, and the Edgemar is a great promoter of that, and yeah, so it's nice to have a theater that's so outgoing with as far as kids are concerned.
I agree, my own kids. My youngest one wanted to do something like that in school. You know, he asked about it, if they were doing like a little mini play, but it was just within the class, and you know, it was cute. They all got up and they read right from their own little handwritten scripts and stuff like that. But if it's not just done within the class, then there's nothing else. But this teacher, you know, managed to incorporate it with the 40 kids that she had. Everyone had a part. Everybody spoke some lines, but
that's as far
as it goes. You know, the school has nothing, like they don't put it on for the school or anything just because the budgets don't handle it. I mean, they have their little paper hats and paper necklaces and all these little costumes that they came up with on their own, you know, out of paper products. It was really cute. But, you know, but to take him somewhere now and do it with him, you're paying out of the nose for him to go to some classes, and I can't do that. I mean, not too many people can anymore, you know? So it's kind of like, what do you do?
I know, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it surprises me. In Iowa, there is so much access to, I don't know why in the Midwest, there seems to be more access to the arts for kids and for adults, too. You know, the community theater is really well funded, and well funded. I don't think community theaters are ever well funded, but you know, it's just been when I come out here, there's so much privatization of the arts, and it was kind of strange at first because it's just, you know, it's like in Iowa, what do you do except do football or be in choir? And then out here, there's just not the. I mean, the Edgemar has a really unique program in the sense that they have a gorgeous stage, and they give all these kids access to that. Like you said, they're not. It's not like the kids are putting on a show in their classroom. They have this gorgeous, huge stage to perform on, and I think that's amazing.
Yeah, see, that would be thrilling. See, Buffalo is start. I know the city of Buffalo is starting to build back up their theater. They just reopened their little theater district this year. It was closed for quite some time, and the big theater in Buffalo is called the Shea. And I think the first play comes out next week or whatever. Don't ask me what it is. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But they're starting to rebuild it. But, you know, for people to go see plays, which is fine. But, you know, get the community involved somehow. You know, anybody can go see a play in probably just about any city that they're in. But, you know, for these kids, especially, you know, Buffalo is a really high, has a very high juvenile crime rate.
Does it? I don't know very much about high. Buffalo. Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, I'm only here a year, but I'll tell you right now, I've never seen so much crime with children and kids, you know, sticking people up, this one shooting that one, and it's really bad. I mean,
oh
it's not,
God.
It's really bad. It's not good at all. It's not. I mean, I don't live in the city of Buffalo. I'm on the outskirts of it, but it's, you would think you would want to get more community things for these kids to do, you know, to try and deter them, because they're all younger kids, anywhere from 11 to 17.
Where do your kids go? Do they go to school in?
My kids, no. My kids, we live in Hamburg, New York. It's right outside of Buffalo. It's, you know, a few minutes away, not that much different in time. I'm like 30 minutes away from Niagara Falls. And they're in an absolutely wonderful school district. I mean, it's top-notch, and, I mean, no issues, no real violence in the school, no nothing, although my kids did get into a fight today on the bus, but that doesn't count.
That's normal, right? That's just
yeah, like, right, but nothing like that, nothing at all. You know, it's like one of those little towns that, you know, they have the volunteer firefighters on the corner, and you know, you got your ice cream shop, and they refer to soda as pop, and it's hysterical.
Oh, that's great.
Are you serious?
Hysterical. I thought that was a Midwest thing. I love that.
Oh, they call soda pop. I had no idea what this woman was talking about when I first got here, and she asked me if I wanted pop. I did not know what it meant. And then she had to explain it to me, and I thought it was hysterical. So, you know, and they call lollipop suckers. It's just like one of those towns that you would expect, you know, from the 50s, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very well, I mean, I'm like 10 minutes away from the Buffalo Bills Stadium. And it's like you go from one extreme to the next. You can go into one neighborhood and you have a community of prefab homes. Then across the street you have just regular two-story houses. And, you know, then a couple blocks down you have these huge houses that the Bills players live in. Nothing's gated. Everything is just kind of open and meshes in with each other. It's actually
wow.
pretty nice.
Yeah, it sounds like it's very preserved.
Yeah, you know, and a matter of fact, Denzel Washington is up here filming a movie in Olean County, which is probably about 30, 45 minutes away, and Keanu Reeves actually was just here yesterday scouting the Erie County jail for location shoots that he's for some movie that they're filming up here. So a lot of they're starting to do a lot more filming up here. But you know what? That would be great if they start pulling in people, locals, you know, to
hires,
the extras
yeah.
and stuff like that. You know, that would be great, you know, for the community. But, you know, one way or another, I know the cities are making their money. But as far as bringing in the kids and stuff like that, that's what Denzel Washington did. The Olean County, I can't remember the name of the city, the town that he was in, but he used the local schools and the local kids out of the schools for a shoot.
Oh, gosh, that's great.
So,
that's
you know, I mean, it's stuff like that I'd like to see more of.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
In the theater world.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of local hires from Iowa now, too, because the tax incentives are so amazing there. So when I went there for the Iowa Film Festival this year, who was that? Adrian Brody, and they're filming all of these films in Iowa and doing a lot of local hire.
Wow.
Which is fantastic because people finally have access to film in Iowa. I mean,
right.
I used to have to drive 2.5 hours to Minneapolis to do an audition, you know, and
really?
That was with 500 other girls. Yeah, because they're for film at least, because
mm-hmm.
there was not even a film commission when I was a kid.
Well, now the Iowa Film Festival is hugely recognized now.
Yeah, it was great this year. It was fantastic.
Right.
We had Randall Kleiser got, and David Provall both got, well, David got a Lifetime Achievement Award, and Randall Kleiser got the Orson Welles Award for his, for all of his directing. And he's, you know, he directed Grease and Flight of the Navigator and White Fang and It's My Party, and has this incredible body of work, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And so it was great. I mean, you know, if you appreciate the small town thing, you know, Mason City's only about 40,000 people, and it was just David and Randall and all of us driving around to these tiny radio stations, you know, doing press, and they were so game. They were just so game and had such a ball. So
That is so nice.
It is nice. It's really nice. It's really nice. Yeah.
I love to hear that, especially when you have people of that caliber, including yourself, that will go, you know, I'm like, I'll go do that. That's what I love about actors and that are like that. You know, they don't lose touch with reality, you know, and they'll go do the smaller radio stations. Just because I'm not on, you know, like Sirius Satellite don't mean nobody's not listening. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like maybe a smaller audience, but you know what? It's still people that maybe can't afford Sirius Satellite, you know? That's how you have to look at it.
And
you
people
know?
Just appreciated this it so much. And I don't know if you've experienced this with your shows, but and the like you said, the caliber of people that you talk to, but it's really amazing to see you know, as an actor, you come out here and there's so many different levels of success, but these people who are at this top tier of success have maintained this sense of integrity and openness and willingness and niceness that's just, it's just unbelievable. I mean, Randall and David and all these people, Noah, are so accessible. You know, they're just so nice, and it's fascinating to me. And I guess that's probably why they are so successful.
Right.
Everybody who I've met at a certain level are just so down to earth and so cool, so unbelievably cool. And
it's all a matter of who you surround yourself with.
Yeah.
I think we actually talked about that before. If you surround yourself with the same people that kept you grounded from the get-go, you're going to stay grounded. You know, if you want to get out there and get into Hollywood and do it just to be famous and not do it because it's something that you love, and then you start surrounding yourself with these bunch of jack-offs that are going to just pull you down, then you're going to end up falling down too, flat on your face.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So then you know what? Then you get what you deserve. You know, you need to just kind of stay back and keep your family and your friends that before you were that way, the closest to you, and you'll always stay that way. I completely agree with you. And I'm sure that there are a lot more. I mean, I have Marsha Mason. She was one of my first guests. And when they asked me, her agency had called me and said, you know, because I did somebody else from them, and they were like, well, we have Marsha Mason. She's got a new skincare line. I was like, are you kidding me? You think I want to talk about her skincare line? All the stuff that this woman has done, and you think my main point of interest is her skincare line? I want her on the show. I don't care if nobody tunes in that day. I want her on the show. And she came on, and she was incredible. I mean, and incredible enough to, a couple days later, had her office send me a sample, a box of everything that she manufactured for her skincare line, like her herbal line that she did, Resting on the River.
Sweet.
She was just an amazing woman, you know, and you would never think someone of her caliber and all of the things that she's accomplished in her career, she's going to do some pissy aunt little internet talk show, but she did, you know.
What separates, I feel that's what separates people and oh my gosh. Well, anybody would be crazy not to do your amazing show.
Well, you know what, Tana? You'd be surprised at the no's that I get. But you want to know something? I bet you 9 times out of 10, if I made the pitch myself to the actual actor or actress, they would do it. It's a matter of getting over the publicist. If the publicist doesn't feel it's going to give them enough exposure, especially if it's someone, you know, higher up in the acting world, if you want to call it that, they don't, 9 times out of 10, they don't even respond. You know, and I'll send countless emails. I swear to you, I'll send countless, and until the point where they'll actually block my email address and be like, we don't want to talk to this woman no more. We don't have nothing for her. Our stars are not going to go on that show because it's just not, your numbers are too low. I'm like, are you kidding me? Really?
Which is insane with the internet now and what webisodes and everything?
Twitter and Facebook and everything else. You know what? These publicists, they probably have nightmares every night because so many people go on Twitter and just say whatever they want to say. I mean, for instance, Kanye West must be a publicist nightmare. I would never want to be his publicist to try and do damage control for the things that come out of his mouth and the stunts that he does. You know,
that's crazy.
Okay?
That was so crazy.
Let me tell you, I went into complete mama bear mode for Taylor Swift through my television.
I know, the poor thing.
I went off on, this is what I mean, Twitter and Facebook. I went off on, if you go on Facebook and you look at my profile, my back post, you're going to be like, Joanne said all that? Oh, my God. I didn't care who saw it. I didn't care. And then you see Pink is Twittering at the time that all this is happening, and she don't care. So then you're thinking like, oh, my God, her publicist must be going crazy because Pink is, like, on Twitter calling him the biggest piece of this somebody needs to, like, come at him with a bat. I mean, she was just absolutely so vocal about it. And then went on the Today Show the following day and said, you know, because she was up for that award. And she said to Matt Lauer, now, okay, Matt, you're saying if you said it to Joanne Kubicek on Stardish, it might not get heard like it does on the Today Show. But so she goes on the Today Show and she says, Matt says to her, so, you know, what do you think about that, you know, whatever. And I saw you Twittering. And she was like, well, you know what, this is actually one award I really wish that I would have won because I had whatever designer person, they designed me a special pair of brass knuckles. And I was like, oh, my God. So she's like, she's saying this on the Today Show. Her publicist must have been biting her nails off. It was just like, you know, hysterical to me that they'll go around and do all this stuff, but then my show is more of a show where you connect with your fans and get a little bit down and more open with real people, you know, rather than, you know, and it's like, nah, that's all right. All right, whatever. Go get your nails done again because I'm sure you don't have any left after that interview. You know?
Oh, my gosh. Lord have mercy. I hope I'm never like that with my publicist.
Yeah, no. No, I couldn't imagine. But, I mean, these are, like, people to the extreme. I mean, these are extremists. But these are people, and I can't say that I never approached a publicist for Pink to come on my show to do something. I did, and I got turned down flat.
Wow.
So, you know, it's kind of like, okay, no biggie. Move on.
It's so I love how frank you're being about it because it was really eye-opening when I was doing the, you know, Project Save Our Surf. I was trying to get in touch with all of these celebrities, you know, and just kind of coordinating the whole thing by myself trying to get names, you know, to do the surf-a-thon. And it was my first time going through somebody else's publicist and somebody else's manager. And, oh, my gosh, if that didn't completely turn me around and the doors that were slammed in my face. And, you know, I've always had the publicist, so I just I'm never, ever going to be mean to anyone ever. This is
like a nightmare.
Awful. It's awful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, and people can't, and the assistance of publicists sometimes, not mine. My publicist is amazing. And
oh, God, I love her. I love her. She cracks me up. I mean, I can't actually say I ever had a conversation with her, but we email when you got something coming, she's like, can you do this? And I'm like, of course. Just do it.
I don't know where she came from. She's like the nicest woman in the world.
She really is.
And Sarah, who works with her, is amazing too. But some of these assistants that I talked to were so mean. They're almost meaner than the publicist, you know, because I don't know who they're talking to or who they get slammed,
yeah.
you know, by. But they definitely have something, you know.
You know what's funny? Did you see that they revamped Melrose Place?
Yes.
And,
have you watched that?
Yes, I have, and I have to say I kind of like it. It's I don't know, it's only into the second episode, but I actually watched it because one of the actors on it is Colin Egglesfield, and he was on All My Children. And I really liked him on All My Children, and I just felt that the writers didn't do enough for him. On that show, they brought him on, you know, with a bang and then kind of like let him fizzle out. And it was really bad because he's really very, very talented and not too bad to look at with his black hair and blue eyes.
loving it that he's on the show.
I am. I mean, you know, it makes me happy when I see a soap actor that really gets underused and stepped on get into something, you know, prime time or whatever it does. So I was very, very happy that he got into that. So I wanted to see, you know, how it was. And I like it. I can't say that I don't, but there's a girl who I don't know what the actress's name is. I've never seen her before, but she plays a junior publicist. And she is the meanest biatch you ever want to know.
That's great.
Horrible.
That's
horrible.
That's so true.
And it reminds me of so many people that I've talked to or slam the phone in my ear. And I'm like, oh, I just don't like her because I feel like I know her. It's like that's what they're portraying it to be in Hollywood, in Melrose Place. So, you know, obviously that is just the way that it goes.
Who plays the junior publicist?
I don't know what her name is, honestly.
That's not the Ashley Simpson role.
No. Ashley Simpson plays some lost little girl who was, remember Sydney, Laura Lee, and she comes back and she tries to say that Sydney was her mom. And then Laura Layton got killed off already. So that's what the whole story's focused around. Who killed Sydney, basically.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So I love that you love this junk like I do. I love it.
I do.
And not that it's junk, but you know what I mean? It's like, it's junk. It's just wonderful.
You know what? I think David just called in and hung up. I just went to go pick him up, and he's gone. So let me see if he calls back.
Oh, man.
I mean, it wasn't even like a half a second. So I'm hoping that he'll call right back.
I'm trying to text him and get him to call in. We just had a 9-hour rehearsal, so I don't know where he is. But
well, you know what? It's all right. Oh, well, maybe this is, okay, here. I think this is him here. I believe this is Mr. David Provol, is it?
Yes, it is Mr. David Provol.
Well, hello. How are you? Welcome to Stardish Radio.
Well, thank you very much. How you doing?
I'm fabulous. We were waiting for you to call, and we're just sitting here chit-chatting, waiting for the master to call in. I have Tana on the line.
Oh, good. You see, Tana, I live up to what I say I do.
You give me a heart attack. I'm like, you're a half hour late for your curfew. What's
I'm a half
on?
Hour late. Oh, I'm sorry, ladies.
Oh, that's okay. You know, women, we can just sit here and talk forever.
Yeah. Where are you from, Talk Forever?
I am from Yonkers, New York.
Of course. Okay. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. So there you
I
go.
Know. I you know what? I have to say, I was a little nervous having you come on because I was a big fan of yours on The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Big fan. Big fan.
Isn't he scary? Isn't
you know
like,
what? Yeah, but I liked it. And it was great. I mean, this is the stuff that I saw, you know, growing up, you know, not the actual acts, but, you know, the tough guys. Teamsters are, like, running my family, so you're always looking at something. My father had a partner named Sonny, and it was just always that kind of stuff, you know.
Partner
so
named
I loved
Sonny,
it.
That's a funny line.
My father owned camp companies in Yonkers, and his partner's name was Sonny. It was
his last name.
Oh, I don't know. My
What's your last name?
My last name is Kubasak.
Oh, I was expecting a vowel at the end of the name.
No, I'm not Italian. Everybody thinks we are, but no, I'm a Czech.
Did we talk about this? Did you know I'm Czech, too?
Anna's Czech.
I did not know that.
Oh, my God. You know, David knows my family history. I love that. David and I are like siblings from another lifetime.
Really?
I think David's one of my best friends out here. But, yes, I'm Czech. Cizik. My mom's maiden name is Cizik, which is songbird in Czech. And that was my character's name in Hollywood Dreams, Margie Cizik. I named that after my mom's side of the family. So, yeah, my mom and dad go every year to Prague and, you know, go through our family history and go to all these towns and graveyards and stuff.
That's
so we're
nice.
Both feisty Slavics.
Well, you know what, though? My family's not allowed. Well, I don't know. At least the last I heard, we weren't allowed back in Czechoslovakia because my father's uncle was a priest, a Catholic priest, and he helped during the communist times to funnel people out during that time. And he actually made his way to Yonkers and started a church in Yonkers called Most Holy Trinity. And so now there's like a little section in Yonkers on Walnut Street that's named after him. He started a Catholic school there, and there's like a nice over the years, they built like a senior citizen home. The way you say my name really is Kubasek, but Americanized, we've done it Kubasek forever and a day because it was just easier.
See, aren't you glad I brought that up, Tana?
I'm so glad. I had no idea. I've done this is my third interview with her. I had no idea.
Right. This is Tana's third time on the show. You see that, Tana? Every time you come back, I learn something new about you and make me like you even more.
Let's talk about me. It's far more interesting. Okay.
I want to talk
about a very interesting story, by the way. It's fascinating stuff.
Grandfather,
was it? Yeah, that's fascinating. Okay.
Well, David, we were talking about your play. Just 45 minutes from Broadway. Tell me how you got roped into doing this play with Henry.
I like that, roped in. How? I'll tell you how. And she can hear this too, Tana. Because we were having lunch one day. And that morning, I've always had this thing about Guys and Dolls, the play Guys and Dolls, and wanting to do it for a lot of years. And somehow it hit me that morning. Guys and Dolls, and I was thinking about it and what it would be. And then I got to lunch with Tana and Henry said, hey, look, I'm writing this play about this character who's in Guys and Dolls. I said, this is fantastic. I was just thinking about that this morning. So that's how I got routed, because I thought the gestalt, you know, the energy, the vibe, whatever you want to call it, was so right that morning I was thinking about Guys and Dolls. Then they tell me I'm playing a character who's doing Guys and Dolls, so that was exciting. But
that's a good story. I like that.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true.
Yeah,
It is. Do you remember, Tana, am I saying to you?
I do.
Yeah,
Henry wrote the part.
And then Tana said to me, oh, yeah, and we'll do little excerpts from Guys and Dolls. Yeah, yeah, right, sure. That's history now. There's no excerpts. Except now I get to make an entrance where I'm whistling with Forgotten, you know, that song from Guys and Dolls. It's the only reference to Guys and Dolls. I probably squeezed it into the play.
Well,
so that's
at least you got what you wanted.
No, that's how I got hooked in, to quote you. But I'm happy to be hooked in because it's a group of incredible people. Lovely director, Gary Amoff. Really good guy and knows his work and is an actor himself. And it's a wonderful energy to be around these actors there. And we have a set designer that has knocked me for a loop, this guy. Does such great work. He did great work on the set. And this great work, and as usual, kind of Fredericks, your Czech girlfriend there, chewing up the scenery, upstaging everybody, as usual.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
My God. If there's any upstaging, it's done by Provol. He's
going
to steal this whole play. You know, David's got a thing where he walks into anything, including The Sopranos, and you just can't look at anybody else.
I love
who
how
that?
Cool
was that Tana?
Provol. Yes, I love how she calls you Provol. That I love that.
They're like a baseball
10,000
team.
Different pronunciations for my name. My friend Lisa here, we joke about it. You know Lisa, Tana.
Yeah.
About how many pronunciations of my name, Provol. Yeah, nobody does it. But it's all right. It's all good as long as the check clears.
There you go. Absolutely. I can totally agree with you on that one. Tana and I were talking about the gala opening on the 17th and what the proceeds are going to be going to, and how important it is to support the children's outreach programs that Edgemar is doing, Center for the Arts. And then we were talking about the lack thereof around the country, basically. So it's so wonderful that they're doing this.
Yes. No, it is important. I read something this morning in the LA Times. I'm not going to repeat it because it's very depressing about a father who could not support a child. And I'm sorry I even brought it up. This
tell me, what is it? You can say whatever you want.
Well, a guy, no, I know we can bring it. It's just a depressing thing. He actually murdered this child because he couldn't live up to child support. It's horrible. It's a horrific story.
Sure, it is. It's terrible.
You know, the first people neglected on earth are children. They're the first people neglected. Always.
It's true.
They're the most vulnerable.
This is true.
People take better care of their pets. They take care of better care of their pets than they do of children sometimes.
Right. Well, that's why I'm excited that they're actually it's being donated to a program like that, because there are so few and far between, as we were saying, and it's just sad. It's sad. Like I told Tana when I was a kid, you know, we had the things in public schools where we were able to do what we wanted to do, but now it's like you can't. You know?
Yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of. Have you run into a lot of children's programs out here, David? That are publicly funded, or I mean, there's not a lot of
no,
theater
Cheryl
or film
and I,
programs
the church,
for kids.
Cheryl and I, through her church, work. She works a lot on programs for children, for everything. But we do what we can do. So that's that. We do what we can do. It's so important. And I'm blessed with three children, three grandchildren.
Ah, wonderful.
The greatest blessing in the world, children.
Yes, I have two. And
oh, good. You're blessed.
They remind me every day. Yeah, of course. Of course. You know, I'm almost bald now, but yeah, I'm good.
You almost what? Oh, oh, I see. Yeah, right. Well, they can do that, too.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a single mom of two boys. One is going to be 17 in December. One is going to be 9 on Halloween. So I have my challenges, you know, but it's all good. You know, I find my ways to keep them busy. My big one's in football and track, and my little one is in Cub Scouts. And so little things like that keep them busy. But I was telling Tana, I'm from Yonkers, but I live in a little town outside of Buffalo now, Hamburg. And there's just not really too many community things for the kids to do. And I was telling her, Buffalo itself is an extremely high crime rate city. And it's terrible. But, you know, so we were saying with the lack of, you know, community things for these kids to keep themselves out of trouble, this is what ends up happening.
Yeah. Is that where you are right now?
I'm in a little town called Hamburg. I live about 10 minutes away from the Buffalo Bill Stadium in Orchard Park. So
A lot of snow.
You know what? I'm here a year now. It really wasn't too terrible last winter.
Oh, good.
I'm not worried about it. I love the snow. Love snow. So,
right.
David, what else are you working on besides the play?
I'm working on a movie that my wife and I wrote titled Baby O. We're in post-production. We've been held up by money, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And but we're coming through, and it looks like we'll be ready in another month. It's a kind of musical drama comedy, very eclectic kind of film. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything. It's everything. And I love it. And I do the lead. I have the lead. And wrote it for me, and it's kind of an homage to Vegas entertainers, to singers and comics, and my favorite performers are those people.
Mm-hmm.
I love comics. And that's it. That's what it is. It's an homage.
Who's your favorite comedian?
Of all time, my favorite?
Sure.
Well, Lenny Bruce was, I think, you know. Actually, you know, you can't call Lenny he's brilliant. Prof, a prophet in the but Bruce Derluth, of course, you know, was for a different kind of comedy, for physical comedy, for intellectual comedy, Lenny Bruce. I've always thought his partner, Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis's partner, is a brilliantly funny man. People, my favorite comic. There's been a lot. The movie is dedicated to a guy named Joey Villa, who is a stand-up comic who opened for Sinatra and guys like that. Those kind of guys, you know, with the teeth. The tuxedos, a little worn out because they've worn them a little too much, but... they're Pagliacci's, those guys. You know, they're Pagliacci's.
Right. I actually just did an interview with Dean Martin's daughter, Dina Martin.
Yeah.
You know, about a CD that she just released in honor of her father.
Oh.
Very cool girl.
What was she like?
You know what? She was really, really down to earth, really sweet. This is what we go back to about the starstruck kind of internet stuff. She was fabulous. She's nothing that, you know, you would have expected, you know, coming from a family of that caliber.
Yeah.
What we were saying, David, because my show is, you know, based off the internet, it's difficult to get to some higher caliber performers because they look down on the internet as press. So it's always a nice, refreshing thing when you can actually get to the actual talent and explain the concept of the show. And they're like, oh, of course. And it's just getting through those publicists and, you know, actually getting the word to them, you know. And look, I have you. So what more could I ask for right now? Holy goodness.
That's so sweet. That's very nice. You're a nice girl.
I cry. I definitely cry.
That's a very nice thing to say. It's a very sweet thing to say. And they better find out how many people that this reaches. It's a lot of people now.
You know, God, the internet. It's 40 years old. 40 years old last month, I think.
Is it already 40 years old? That's unbelievable.
Yeah. 40 years
I said,
old?
Hey, 40 years old. I said, I'm the same age as the freaking internet.
Wow.
Yep.
I didn't think it was anywhere close to that. Wow,
40 years, yep. So, see, Al Gore was really busy 40 years ago. I have to ask a couple things about The Sopranos, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Tell me what it was like when you first went into the show and got the role of Richie, what it was like actually doing the show.
Well, when I first got there, they had that first season, and I was obviously stepping into a phenomenon, because after the first season, the world was lit by Soprano conversations. I mean, everybody was talking Sopranos. I had seen it the first season and sat in Indy in my house and said, Jesus Christ. I went in originally and didn't get, but they said, oh, we promised you a role someday, and they did come through. So the first season was, second season that I came in, it was very edgy stuff, because are they a one-trick pony? Can they repeat that first season? The second season, probably far more stressful for them. Than the first. So that's what I was walking into, that kind of climate where there's a lot of stress, a lot of tension, a lot of that. And it was that. At least that's how I read it. And what was the other part of the question? I've forgotten already.
Well, just working on the show in general, dealing with... because, I mean, when the first year of The Sopranos was, like you said, phenomenal. But then a lot of Italians were kind of pissed off because it was like, you're stereotyping us and we don't like it. And you're in New Jersey and we don't like it. You know, so how was it working on the show, doing these kind of storylines, you know, when you got all this kind of mixture of emotions and backlash and press, you know, it's a lot to step into.
Yeah, well, no, I had a personal experience in Chicago when I went to do some personal appearances in Chicago. They had to put a security thing around me, two big guys, apartment building-sized guys, were flanking me, and I really didn't want to be, and then as I got out of the car to go where we were going, there were people with tickets, and it was a little crazy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But what it was an imbalance. What they've forgotten, the show did have a doctor, Lorraine Bracco, who was of Italian heritage. They had priests of Italian heritage. They had people, you know, so that was all put aside. And, yeah, I was affected by that in the second season. In that way. But I think that kind of eased off. I really don't know. But second season, yeah, there was that kind of adverse reaction. Italian-American Sicilian society, all that, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, honestly, driving through New Jersey now, I just want to play the Sopranos theme music because that's
right.
that's what you feel. I did a cross down the East Coast drive over the summer from Buffalo to Florida. I'm like, okay, I'm driving through New Jersey. Where's my Sopranos soundtrack? All I need is a cigar and my arm out the window. That's what it is, you know.
It's
a mark on Jersey, you know.
I was putting gas in my car a few weeks ago, and these people pulled up the sound of their radio, and there was the theme song, and they couldn't believe it. They were screaming. They went, listen, and they pulled up and rolled down the windows, and the theme was on their radio for some reason. I thought they had it, but it was a coincidence. So I'm pumping gas, and the theme is
That's
on.
That's great. They were just random fans?
Yeah. Okay. It just happened. It just happened. Just like this, I'm just putting gas in the car, look up, the people are screaming out of a car, and the theme song is on. It doesn't stop because of A&E now.
Absolutely.
A&E.
I still watch repeats of it. You know, it's nice to go back and kind of remember. I mean, it's one of those shows that kind of made its mark on HBO and started this whole trend with HBO, I think, and made it more popular for these shows like True Blood and Entourage, you know, to gain more popularity. HBO is kind of known for that now. They certainly don't play hardly any movies, and if they do play them, they're all repeated movies that you probably saw a gazillion times. You know, it's like you're paying really to watch these shows now.
I'm probably biased, but I think Sopranos is the best show of all time. What I've been doing with Ron Vignoni, who's our editor, and Henry, we started maybe just 2 months ago. We started at season one. And then we watched 2 to 3 episodes in between writing and rehearsing the play of Sopranos a day. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing that for the last 2 months. We have 2 episodes left. And let me tell you, after you watch it again, after seeing the whole entire thing, it just gets better. I mean, it just gets better. Except, you know, David isn't in part of it, but he's, you know, David, you're my favorite character on that show. Besides Peter Bogdanovich.
He's a smart kid.
So, tell me, let's talk about you being on the show. That behind the scenes, were there any light moments, any funny moments? Was there a prankster on the set? Did you all get along? Did you hang out? Was it that kind of environment, or was it strictly business?
We hung out. It was sort of like the Goombas on the corner at times. The only difference was they put a camera on us. The guys in the show, you know, Tony Sirico and Stevie Van Zandt and Michael Imperioli. There are times it did feel that way, like it was just guys hanging out. But there was that stress of who's next.
Mm-hmm.
Who is going to get whacked next? And there was a prop guy who loved toying with everybody. And one day I was standing there with Vinny Pastore and Michael Imperioli, and we're just standing waiting for the shot. And the prop guy motions to us with like a knife across his throat. Now it could have meant any one of us, right? The three of us. And in unison, the three of us said, "What did I do?" And the guy cried. You know, I mean, it was one line. What did I do?
So what was it like?
It was
like
constant
when you found
that.
Out?
Who's next? Who's next? Who's next? It was sad. You're out of a job. You're
but
off the greatest show on earth.
Never mind. But how did you find out that you were going to get whacked? Because I heard
David
that
Chase.
They kept it kind of secret until it was pretty close.
They do keep it a secret. With my character, there was a real debate about it because HBO wanted him, and David Chase said, no, I wrote it as a gangster show. People get, and this is exactly what David Chase, you know, he was going back and forth and back and forth. And until, Jimmy Gandolfini said to me once, he says, you know what they're doing? They're going to split the show. They're going to do Richie Aprile moves to Philly, and you're going to be in Philly. I'm going to be here. And there was rumors like that, and it was really a very up and down kind of. It was not a healthy thing. I didn't like it at all. It was kind
mm-hmm.
of a psychodrama. I don't like being played with that way, not knowing if I'm going to go to work. And finally, David, what he does is either he takes someone out for dinner and gives you the butch of the morgue, the kiss of death, or he calls you and says, I'm sorry, but this is it. And he called me like three times because it went back and forth, and he was, you know, he didn't. I'm not sure, but I think this, and then finally called me, and I said, well, do I get a reprieve or not, Governor? And he said, it's a gangster show. This is this quote, people get killed on gangster shows.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I couldn't ask for a better way to go than have a woman to kill me.
Oh, that was awesome. Oh,
because,
my God.
And none of them were smart enough to get Richie. So,
right. And there you go. You got Janice.
The only one who'd be
oh
smart enough to get Richie is a woman.
It was
strong enough to get Richie was a woman. So,
I
never
realized
before,
that,
David, but that's actually kind of smart. I mean, do you think was David Chase aware that he's creating that kind of attention on the set? Because I mean, basically, that's what all the characters feel, right? And they're
yeah.
Is I'm gonna
yeah.
Tony's gonna put
yeah,
the
no,
hand
no,
on me
no.
next.
No, I think we can curse on this show, right? We can.
You can say whatever you want. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm in a car and a guy wants a park. Let me just move out of space. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, David Chase. I think whether it's conscious or not, but he could be a mind fucker of the highest order. He's a brilliant guy, amazing genius type person. But I think he does know that it does do that, and it does bleed into the show, and it does bleed into performances, and
mm-hmm.
it does read, it does. But I'd rather not be played with.
Right.
I don't translate that well in work. Some people do. No, some people do. Some people need to be manipulated or need... And they can get better performances. Not for me.
Right.
No.
Well, after your trip to Statriali's, did you watch the show the next season? Did you keep up with it?
Yeah, I did. I watched. In fact, I did a couple of things, ghost things.
Mm-hmm.
Back once or twice. And then some of the shows, I thought there was something changing, and I didn't. I thought they had a couple of shaky seasons.
Towards the end, right?
Towards fifth, sixth was shaky.
Yeah.
Third was, there were a couple, but it's brilliant no matter what. I mean, I'm hair splitting now. It's a brilliant show.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the ending?
I loved the ending. I loved it. He whacked everybody, David Chase. He whacked me. I didn't know the ending, and I'm sitting in, and I said, this television set, I knew we had to get rid of this television set. I can't believe it. And then the credits rolled, and I said, David, you whacked me. Because what did everybody want? Did they want to see a family wiped out at a counter or there in a restaurant?
Right.
I mean, what do you want? Life
right.
goes on. And those
mm-hmm.
things happen, and you eat your hamburger and your onion rings, and life goes on.
Right.
He built it beautifully, very Hitchcock-ish, with the car not being able to park, and she's outside, and she wasn't able to park, didn't get inside. Guys at the counter, I love the build, and I thought it was just
mm-hmm.
he outdid himself David Chase outdid himself. It was magnificent, I think. And then he got death threats, I heard. People hated it. Hated it.
They did. They really did. Right.
You hated it. Okay.
Was it meant for him to die? I can't believe he died. I can't believe he died.
Oh, that the family got shot?
Yeah, I can't believe Tony.
No, I think it's about life goes on, that ending.
No, but are you saying that David meant for everybody to believe that he got shot at the end?
No, I'm saying I think what David says is that things go on and they'll go on. And most probably we can write our endings. He had a couple of years and then he goes away for life somewhere. I mean, I didn't need to see a guy walk up to that counter really and take and shoot Gandolfini and shoot
Carmella.
Great actress, Edie Falco. Mm-hmm. And the kid, I didn't need that. Me personally didn't need that. I'm just curious as to how, my ending was that he has another year on the streets, that's all.
Right.
And he goes to prison. But I understand people resenting it. I really do. But David whacked everybody. And there's a show when he says, "Yeah, I wonder what it's like getting shot." And Jimmy says, Gandolfini, Tony Soprano says, "Well, everything goes black." And that's just what happened. Everything went black. So we all got whacked. All of us.
Mm-hmm. See, I never even thought about it that way, but that would make more sense. Yeah. I mean, I was more confused than anything else. I was like, what is that? Are you kidding me? It's like, something must have happened. But when you really get into it, and especially you, because you were part of it, you would be able to see a lot more of that than I think the regular TV viewer, quote, you know. But that's actually a good thought of that.
I don't think, I'm not assuming I have more insight into brilliant. Yeah, the brilliant David Chase's mind, but that's how I saw it. I saw David in just magnificently arrogant ending. Most arrogant, I mean, balls like you've never seen in your life. Black. I mean, they have the guts to do that.
Right.
I'm laughing now thinking about it. Oh, I'm blocking somebody else. I got to get... move the car again.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Okay. I keep driving into driveways.
Oh, my gosh. Don't be getting into no accidents now.
No.
What, do you still keep in touch with anybody from the show?
Yeah, I spoke to Vinny the other day, and all the Lorraine Bracco.
You know,
Lorraine Bracco they were all down here in San Diego, and they asked me to come out for dinner the other night, just 2 nights ago.
Okay. Well, Vinny Pastore, I have an indirect personal connection to him. Okay.
Well, from your area.
He grew up in New Rochelle, and he hung out with my father's sister growing up, all the way to 20 years. 25 years or whatever, and he lived on City Island, and that's where my dad's sister lived. So they were, back then anyway, good friends, and they did still see each other on City Island occasionally, but she had moved down to Florida. So that's that little indirect connection. But do you think that would make him come on my show, Vinny Pastore?
No. Well, no. Why? He said no to you?
His publicist said no.
Well, he didn't say no, though. I'll
say no.
On that you're a nice girl, smart girl, and you're from Yonkers, and then maybe
that's
that'll
right.
be
that's right. You tell him
okay.
Marion
no,
Marion Aiello is my aunt. But this is what we were talking about, Tana, the publicist. I said if you get around those publicists and you get to the actual talent, you'll get a guest.
I'll call him for you. I will.
Oh, David, you're so sweet.
Let's see if that works.
Get
full okay.
on your
so
side.
Cute.
You'll get the guest.
You're a nice girl. You know what? I'm driving, and if they stop me, I get a ticket, and I'm not going to.
That's right, you do. All right, well, I'm going to let you off the hook because I don't want you getting a ticket. But
okay.
You got to promise to come back and just bullshit with me more about
anytime
your career
you
and the Sopranos.
Anytime
okay?
you want, call me.
Absolutely.
Tana has my number. You can call me, and we'll set up another date, and we'll talk again.
Absolutely. David, it's been a big, big pleasure. Good luck with the play.
Thank you very much, Tom.
All right, sweetheart.
Tan, I'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Prolal.
Learn your lines.
Good night. Tana, good night, he is everything that you said he is. He's a doll, and he's my new BFF.
Isn't he adorable?
Yeah. He's my new BFF. That's
totally.
I'm going to tell everybody David Prolal is my new BFF. Okay. That's hysterical. I can't believe that you're Chuck.
I know.
Start an interview.
The whole thing, Cobla Hayes and Rolikis for Christmas. You know, we keep it real. sauerkraut and dumplings. You know.
Yeah. Well, my mother always made pierogies and kielbasa and sauerkraut and bacon and it was just. You know, my mother is Polish. My dad is Czechoslovakian. But I remember very little about the stuff that we used to do when we were smaller with my grandmother. My grandfather died before I was actually a couple months before I was born, so I never got to really do anything with him. But I'm gonna have to call my uncle. There's a book that my family is in, and it tells the story of what my uncle did. I'm going to find that book, and I'm going to send it to you.
Oh,
just
that'd
so you'll
be great.
See. Yeah, there's a whole history of it. It's definitely a good read. It's a good history lesson for my kids, you know. So I'm going to call my uncle and see, because I know that he just had a grandson, so I know he's got it around, because he keeps everything, my uncle. So
I would love to read that. I mean, mm-hmm. I should have figured out with your last name before, because the small town that my mom comes from in Iowa is called Garner, Iowa, and it's all, you know, all the families, it's the Turches and the Kapachaks and it's all these Czech families, and they're all based around, you know, you have these like little settled communities all based around a specific church.
And that's how Yonkers was, yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's exactly how Yonkers was. And you know what? You had your based around this church were the Polish families, the Czech families, and the Irish families. Everybody went to this church. I mean, it was a Roman Catholic church, but everybody went to it.
Right.
And, you know, but it was funny because growing up, people actually thought I was Italian. You know, it didn't matter what my last name was, but because when they saw my father, it was like, oh, you're Italian. Because my father's dark hair, you know, dark hair, blue eyes, and he big guy, 6'3", you know, and he was just like the way David would describe him is, you know, these buildings, you know, and that's what he was. And just the talk of the New York accent just really kind of made everybody believe that there was a vowel at the end of our last name, and I just wasn't saying it right. But no, it's really Kubasek, and we just say Kubasek because it was easier. People were like, what? What?
Right.
So my father's like, all right, it's Kubasek, whatever, just say it. I'm like, all right. So, but yeah. Funny, funny stuff, girl.
Yeah, I love it. We're probably cousins. In some,
you know what? From
distant.
Some distant way, you never know.
Totally.
You know? We're gonna have to get into this off the air now. So I just want to reiterate: Tana Frederick and David Prolal will be at the Edgemore Theater. Let me see, where's my address here? I don't have the address. Edgemore Center for the Arts, opening night, October 17th, and let's reiterate that the performance. Proceeds for that night will be donated to support the children's outreach programs at the nonprofit Edgemore Center for the Arts. And the play is called, take it away, Tana.
Just 45 Minutes from Broadway, the world premiere by Henry Jaglom.
Mm-hmm. And the previews begin October 1st. And it opens Saturday, October 17th at 8 p.m. Tickets are so reasonable, $25 for, you know, admission. Are you kidding? And the gala performance is $100, still not even a big deal. Reservations, 310-392-7327. Go see it and see these lovely people and support a good cause in the meantime.
Thanks so much for promoting this. You're just the best.
Santa, anytime, my girl, anytime. You're always welcome. You know that. And I will be in touch with you very soon. I'm gonna find that book, and then I'll call you, and I'll send it to you.
Okay, you got it. And I'm going to get a little BFF necklace for you and David Provol, one of those hearts that's, like, broken in the middle. You guys are so cute.
Oh, my God. Well, I want to say, everybody, don't forget to come back tomorrow, 10 p.m. Eastern time. We're going to have on Mark Lawson, another little hottie body from One Life to Live. This guy is so adorable. Oh, my God, so adorable. He'll be coming on to talk about what's going on in Landview, Pennsylvania, in the world of soaps. So don't miss out on that one. And I want to say thanks again to my girl, Tana. Always a pleasure.
The pleasure's all mine, sweetie.
All right, sweetheart, you have a good night, and go learn your lines.
I will.
All right, have a good night, honey.
Okay, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.